This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
I'm not a normal tourist. I'm a disaster tourist. I only visit places that are falling apart and are totally broken. I'm not interested in normal tourism. I get quite bored with it, to be honest. You know, and I see people suffering. I see the challenges. So let me take you back to February this year. Not Turkey, I'll come back to that a little later. I was in Yemen. We're running operations in there since 2012. The country is in a civil war. When we got there, to travel 180 kilometers, we had to go around the war. Took us 8 hours to do 180 kilometers. To go to the mountain passes, dusty roads all over the show. There is no electricity. We're complaining about electricity cut. There is zero electricity. The electricity is cut. There is no water. People need dialysis. Our trucks from boards that we are funding is bringing water to the hospitals for dialysis and other support. When you drive through the streets, there isn't a single complete building. All the buildings are left incomplete. Houses, companies, factories, offices, all incomplete, whether it's Aden, Taiz, Hudaydah, wherever it may be, Sana, all incomplete buildings, which means the entire construction industry has collapsed. Yet when you see the people, they're smiling, they have faith, they have hope, they will continue. We need to take these lessons. You see, we're complaining about ESCOM. Yes, it is a problem. But go around the country. Compare ESCOM during the time of the lockdown. What happened in lockdown? There were no cars in the streets. The hospitality industry collapsed. The planes stopped flying. There were no car guards. Waiters couldn't get a tip. Thousands lost their jobs. Companies closed. Are you seeing anything of that now? Drive all over. Roads are under construction. Housing units are being put up. Buildings are coming up. It's flooded all over where you go. People are everywhere. The hospitality industry is full. I was with the general manager of Emirates Airlines recently, and they said pre-COVID, we had 49 flights a year, a week to South Africa. We're already on 43. Go to the CTICC. The conference is booked right up to 2026. Now, please tell me, are mad tourists and mad people coming to a failed state, or people are seeing something that we don't see? They tell you how many people are leaving, and you'll get anxious and worried. Have they told you how many people want to come back? Mario's an estate agent, asked him. People from all over are telling you how many people I want to come back. I've met them myself personally. I get to an airport, and the lady hugs me and she says, I was gone for 20 years. I'm coming back. I'm moving to South Africa again from the UK. I met a lady, she said, I'm married to an American. He must make up his mind whether he wants to stay in this country or he's moving back with me, I'm coming back to South Africa. Last week I met somebody who said, I'm 30 years away out of the country and I've come back. And the mentality, first everybody's scared what we're going to do. But consciously, I've seen a change taking place. Where people decided, you know what, you can't have your legs in two places. You're either here or you're out. There's no middle way. And people have decided they're going to stay. And they're going to fix it and make it work. But you have certain fears. You have certain anxieties. You have challenges. How do you deal with this? The first big challenge you have is a negative mindset. If you have a negative mindset, it will destroy your physical body also. No matter how strong and how fit you are, you'll be paralyzed. You will not be able to move. And our problem is that since 2019, we've had too many disasters linked to each other. And we've combined the disasters together and we haven't isolated them and dealt with them individually. In disaster management, we don't do that. We take one at a time and fix it or deal with it. So we had the biggest problems in KZN, more than anybody else. Because in 2019, when Cyclone Idai hit Mozambique, Malawi and Zimbabwe, we had floods in Durban because of huge destruction. 2020, we were all in the same boat and the whole world was in the same boat. We all got hit by COVID. In 2021, again specific to us, we had the civil unrest. People call that an insurrection, an uprising, nothing of the sort. I'll discuss that a little later. In 2022, we had floods. major floods that caused huge mayhem. The biggest loss of life in South Africa in a flood was in 2022. And 2023 came Eskom's troubles. In a big, it was more manifest. It was there a long time ago, but it was more manifest. So what happened? The biggest challenge was COVID. You see, mental health, mental illness became very big during COVID. We didn't address the floods of 2019, and then came COVID. You know it's a huge problem when healthcare professionals tell you, I need a psychologist. Because healthcare professionals are macho. They don't need any help because they're fine. I know that. I take them to disasters. They see the worst things on earth, and they say, we're fine, we don't need anything. We're okay, we don't need anybody to talk to. But they do talk to each other on the field. They find subliminal ways of sorting the problem out. But during the COVID, for the first time on medical chats, I saw the signs coming that we need help. Because remember, they saw their fellow doctor die in front of them. They saw their wife die in front of them. And they saw patients who could not relate to their families. Because the husband is in the ICU and the wife is outside, you can't come inside, it's COVID, it's distancing. So you die alone. And not one, thousands died alone. And they've seen this, and that compassion as a human being comes in, that how can we survive this? It caused a mental impact on everybody. So on the chat they say, because you know it's a macho thing, you can't ask for psychology. So they say, is there like somebody doing yoga? Who's doing breathing exercises? Is there somebody doing mindfulness? Where can we go in the mountain and do meditation? When they start talking like that, the signs are coming on. We got a problem. And then eventually they say, can I see a psychologist? Which psychiatrist can you recommend? When a healthcare professional says that, the most hardened guy who doesn't want to see a psychologist, you know there's a serious problem. We haven't dealt with that problem yet. It hasn't affected the health only. It affected children who lost their parents, husband who lost their wife, people who lost their jobs, police SAPS who lost their members. We lost 1,500 doctors. We lost 2,000 teachers. So that effect of that COVID was still recovering. And then came the civil unrest in Durban, which just caused more havoc to people, got more terrified. They had not recovered from one, and they got another stroke on top of it. Another effect on the mental being, well-being. And then came the huge floods where you saw the people sitting on the edge of the Umzinyati River. And you're asking them, what are you doing there? It's dangerous. And they tell you, we're waiting for the bodies of our family people to float down so we can catch them there. Because we want closure. And people will call you from all over and say, we need earth moving equipment. My two-year-old baby is stuck inside there in the mud. She's somewhere inside there. We picked up more than 400 people were missing because I set up a line for people to call if somebody is missing. And from all over they had the trauma. Up till now, there's many that have not been found. And people haven't received closure. So that compounded COVID. And when Eskom came, it was like the doomsday. People have started talking. It's a failed state. Economy is going to collapse. South Africa is going to collapse. Have they traveled to disaster areas? Do they know what they're talking about? In 2008, when economic collapse came from the States, didn't we survive? Far bigger than what we got now, we survived. Interest rates 8.5-9% now, we're complaining. We reached interest rates of 24%. We survived that. We've survived the floods of 2019. We've survived COVID. Everything's business is back to normal, everywhere. Yes, we've got a challenge of Eskom, it's not something we can't fix. In the beginning, I said, nothing is insurmountable. And you saw in the last 10 days, we haven't had that amount of load shedding. And yet, we survived May for winter. We've survived up till the 22nd of June. Let's hope the sun comes up. And July and August, we won't have too much of a problem. And the our systems, they're busy fixing load shedding. But we all have a responsibility collectively, you see. It's not the government's Eskom. It's our Eskom. Because the country does not belong to the government. It's not their country. They're only administrators. It's my country. And your country, and the country of 65 million people. We look after it, because it belongs to us. The airport belongs to us, the harbor belongs to us, the sea belongs to us, the mountains belong to us, the roads belong to us, it's not theirs. They've been there, set there for a responsibility. You need to do your responsibility because you've been put there with trust. It's the same for any government anywhere in the world. It's not yours, it belongs to the country. and we take responsibility for that and we fix it, then everybody will say, but I pay tax, company tax, super tax, rates, levy, airport levy, fuel tax and 100 other things. Yes, you do pay that. But can 7.4 million taxpayers' money look after 65 million people? We need to look at that very carefully. Before we keep pointing fingers everywhere, we need to think about it very, very carefully. Offer the country to the Canadians, the Australians, the Germans, anybody in Europe, say take it. And they look at you and they think, are you mad? 7.4 million taxes, we're going to have a problem with you like the problem you have. We can't look after 65 million people. Those people have been disadvantaged for a long time. Instead of complaining and pointing fingers, as he said, Dennis said, know each other's names. Understand each other. We need to understand the context about everything that the so-called fears that we have. They're unfounded. All the fear mongers putting fear into you, you need to understand, will we have social cohesion? Will we have riots? Will we have everything burning down? Is that going to happen? Is the economy going to collapse? None of the above. Go to Sudan and see what's happening right now. They're tearing each other apart. See what has happened in Syria. See what happened in Bosnia. Those kind of things you can't recover from when they happen internally. If they happen from outside, you can fix it. Germany and Japan were flattened in World War II. The superpowers, G7, from the outside they got knocked, they came up again. But when it happens from the inside, that you can't fix. Because it takes years of hate and vengeance and hardship to take it out. But we have a unique nation. We have an absolutely unique nation that will never happen here. I live in the townships. I live in the fields. I'm not in an office. I meet people all the time. So let's go back and see the thing that you are most afraid of. Will the country burn? The country will not burn. You see, 27 April 1994 was a defining moment. Not because the black government replaced the white government. No, that was not the defining moment. Because governments had come and go all the time. In the UK, they got an Indian prime minister. And in Scotland, they got a Pakistani prime minister. Things come and change. And next time, they may have a Chinese guy, who knows. Things come and change all the time. What was significant was that the world's media all came with their war rooms. Set up big war room machines everywhere. South Africa, they didn't say it, but they implied it. South Africa is going to burn on the 27th of April. Shops are going to burn. Houses are going to burn. People are going to get killed. It's going to be outpouring of frustration of years. Everybody, buy food. Stock your houses up. Keep your passport ready. You're going to run. Isn't it what I told you? For the world's media, there's all that money that they spent to come here. It was the most boring news story in world history. Nothing happened. People just stood in long queues with respect, with dignity, with patience, and with hope. In nothing that happened, actually, everything happened. Mandela spoke and said it many times, the people have spoken. The people did indeed speak that day without saying the words. Their actions were the words. And they said it without saying it. We will not burn the country. We will not destroy the country. We will hold hands. We will go together. We will have no hate. We will have no vengeance. We had detention without trial. We were tortured. Our family members went missing. We were oppressed in every way. We were treated unjustly in every way. But we will forgive. It's an inherent quality of the masses of this country that they're not given to violence. The violence you see is a gangster element, which you get everywhere in the world. And there's a gangster element in the corporates too. There's corporate mafias too. Let's be honest. When the point fingers, look at yourself first. It's there everywhere. So people don't want to burn anything. 1995, Mandela followed it up by wearing Francois Pienaar's jersey in the World Cup. Do you know at what risk he did that? Because Afrikanerdom and rugby was associated with oppression. And he wore it because they were leaders that understood social cohesion. They understood that it was important to be inclusive, So they put this stem into the national, show me which country in the world will do that. We need to understand the compromises that were made so that we can all breathe peacefully in this country. It was followed up later with a civil unrest. Everybody calls it a riot. It's not a riot. Do you know what is a riot? And they say insurrection. What is an insurrection? You attack the airport, the harbor, ESCOM. By that, they didn't worry about this. It's already finished. The union buildings, parliament, and everything, defense force, police. You attack that. No. Where in the history of the world do you have an insurrection where people go and rob a mall? Is that insurrection? Take a fish, take a pair of shoes, one shirt, one branded top. No. Those people didn't burn the malls. They were the scapegoats of politicians, who are we call traitors and anti-patriots. That's the only name to call them. When you make friction when one group against the other, you are traitors and anti-patriots. You don't belong in power. But this was not politics. This was pure theft, economics. Because the guys who stole the most came with German cars to fill their boots and the front seats. And they came after hours to steal 2,000 pallets from a warehouse. I won't give the company name. Goods that were made by a company to be delivered to another company, another 100, 400 pallets. At night, the biggest theft took place and trucks were loaded. Poor people who got no shoes don't have heisters. They don't have 4x4s. They don't have big trucks. They don't have German cars. They were the scapegoat to cause friction and conflict. They had a fantastic social media campaign to drive fear into everybody, and we still don't learn. We press forward, press forward, press forward, without checking and verifying the information. And I agree with General Mokonazi, the KZN police commissioner. I would have done exactly the same thing that he said he would have done. I would have shut down social media. Because the conflict was being driven on social media, creating a fear factor and creating racist conflict. That was the best way to burn a country. And you know those things like that? It's people who've got no power, who've got no numbers. So the only way to increase numbers is to tell people to take stuff from the mall for free. They'll come in the thousands. Do that in Europe, do that in Asia, do that in South America. They'll come in bigger numbers to take free stuff. But they were not violent. They were not violent. The burning you got was people who came behind them to burn the stores, not those people. A four-year-old was walking with his mother. A 70-year-old granny was walking with a walking stick. How violent can this lady be? AK-47 in her hand? No, a walking stick in her hand. Nothing to come in the malls. And they took and they walked past and then they waved. Hello, I stole one fridge. Kind of stuff. And they walked across the roads. And they didn't harm anybody. They got to the top, took their stuff, and 3 days later, of course, the police and everybody came, all those things came back. But more than that, they felt absolute remorse. My wife, my domestic that used to work for me, lived in the area from where they stole the stuff. Her son came for a bursary. Now my wife's like a FBI, like a CIA. She set him down. Did you steal? Did you loot? He says yes. He came for a bursary. So she asked him, do you know what loot means? He said, you have to steal. So she asked him, if your mother was alive, what would she have done? He said, my mother would have killed me. Yeah. Because the mother was an outright church-going person. Very devout. All the old people were like that. Then she asked him, do you have any regrets? Yes. And so she asked, what is that? He said, I carried the fridge on my back all the way to the top and I had to give it back. It's a lack of understanding of the enormity of what has been done. I told my wife, give him the bursary, it's fine. Kids need an opportunity. They follow the masses, they do crazy things, but they don't have malice in them. You see, the spiritual teacher that I met, he says, people may have bad habits. It doesn't make them bad people. And this is a very good boy. Just got caught up in the mess of the crowds at the wrong time. Influenced by the anti-patriots and those who common treason and the traitors, followed their system.